Welcome to the Diggin' Oak Island Podcast, podcaster's journey to discover the truth behind the Oak Island mystery. My name's Dave McBride. Thanks for downloading and for listening. On this episode, we're going to hear part two of my interview with author and historian Tony McMahon. Tony is one of the leading experts on the Knights Templar. If you've watched any documentaries on outlets like the History Channel, Discovery, Travel Channel, or any of the like, you've probably seen Tony. He's visited Templar locations throughout the world and has been studying the famous Middle Ages Order of Monastical Knights for decades. In part one of our discussion, we talked about the history of the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ in the Temple of Solomon, also known as the Knights Templar. But on this podcast, we're going to talk a little bit more about the possibilities of what might have become of the Templars after their arrest on Friday the 13th of October in 1307. It's a great conversation. It's only about 15, 20 minutes long. And on the other side of it, we'll delve a little bit more into some of the information Tony gives us and just try to shine a bit more light on some of these possibilities. So after this quick break, I'll be back with Tony McMahon. Okay, so it's the day after. It's Friday. It's Saturday the 14th,
so to speak.
I can't imagine they're all gone. They're not all in jail. They're not. Something happened to these knights, to these men. Some of them must have survived. That popular history is that they didn't. On this day began the end, and then once they were all found guilty, that was the end of the Knights Templar. But it really wasn't, was it? I mean, you sort of mentioned that before. There were places, there were countries, Portugal, one of them, that I believe, if my history is okay, kind of didn't completely side with the church in the destruction of the Templars. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think it's something that historians are still, going through the records, trying to find out what exactly happened in individual parts of the world, but. Yeah, obviously in France, they came to a grisly, horrible end. I mean, but some obviously recanted. You know, they'd have done anything to, being burnt to death is pretty unpleasant, so you'd say anything to get off it. I'm sure some that just left the Templars and became, if they could, just normal members of society. Some of them seem to have melted into the Knights Hospitaller. And as you say, in Portugal, the King of Portugal came up with a rather novel solution. The Templars had helped him to conquer his kingdom, and he didn't particularly feel like crushing them. He didn't want to burn them at the stake. So what he did was he just rebranded them. He just said, okay, guys, from now on, you're called the Order of Christ, and you report to me. And that's exactly what he did, slight rebranding, not massively, and they carried on, but under a new name, and strangely enough, with papal approval, although it took a while for them to get the approval of the popes. But yeah, that's exactly what they did.
Real quickly, the Knights Hospitaller come up a lot in these conversations about the Templars. Can you just give us a little quick background on who they are? Because that name kind of continues on a little bit. And if we're trying to find a thread from the Templars through to where, whatever it might be, modern, even, the 17th or 18th century in Nova Scotia, the Hospitallers come up as sort of the next sort of rung here.
Yeah, so this is the Order of Knights of the Hospital of St. John of Jerusalem. And they were set up actually more or less, in fact, well, slightly before actually, the Knights Templar. I mean, slightly different, if you want, mission statement, but ultimately performing a very similar role. And, equally brave knights. They had, for example, they constructed and ran the incredible Crac du Chevalier fortress in the Holy Land. But they are not destroyed in the same way that the Templars are. Now, there was an attempt by the Pope to merge the Templars and the Hospitallers. And maybe if the Templars had agreed to a merger, they might have survived. But they didn't. And so they were crushed, and the Hospitallers were allowed to continue. And in different forms, they've continued to the present day.
Okay, now I have a few questions for you that, sir, you do not have to come up with a good answer for these, I guess.
Okay,
some of them are, this is like the list of what I call sort of Templar nonsense. and the questions that may or may not be through. There are, for one thing, I often hear them considered as the precursors of Freemasonry. Which is definitely a line that gets you to, you know, to the point where something could have been done in more modern times. Is that true?
So there's, if you ask, if you want the Freemasons, the Masonic authorities, I mean, for example, if I ask the Grand Lodge here in England, are you descended from the Templars? The answer would be, I think I'm right in saying, an emphatic no. So they will not claim that they are directly linked to the Knights Templar. However, the kind of mythology, if you want, of Freemasonry, does suggest a link. But officially, if you want, there is not a link. I mean, I think in reality, no, there isn't a link between the Templars and Freemasonry.
Okay. In order for them to have come to North America, they would have had to have been, especially at the time, we're talking, if this, I mean, most people who opine on Oak Island talk about after the fall of the Templars. I don't know why that is, why they wouldn't have moved stuff when they were perfectly, you know, while they were still together. But we always talk about post 1307. They would have had to have been really reasonably good mariners. Is this something that we have evidence of? Right? Were they sailors of any kind?
Well, they're not renowned for sailing, and certainly not to the New World. I mean, the theory basically runs something like this. That and there are various clues that are offered up, including things like graffiti in some of the dungeons where they were held. So the theory basically runs that that some of the Templars got wind of the warrants that had been issued against them, that they piled the treasure onto carts, that they took them to a port called La Rochelle in France, that there were ships, boats there that were owned by the Templars, and that they then set sail. Now, there are two kind of escape theories, big ones. One is that they went down to Portugal, where they knew they'd get a good reception, and that they hid their treasure in Tomar, and that maybe it's at a later date it made its way to the New World. The other theory, which I think you're alluding to more, is that they went up via England up to Scotland, that they were more confident of a better reception up in Scotland, that they hooked up with the king up there, Robert the Bruce, that they may even, one theory has it, that they fought at the Battle of Bannockburn with the Scots against the English and helped the Scots win a big battle against the English.
Wow, I never heard that one before.
I haven't heard that one before.
Oh, no, I haven't.
And Scottish nationalists get very annoyed by that theory because it kind of suggests that the Scots weren't good enough to beat the English on their own. But anyway, there's a theory that these mysterious knights in white capes arrived on the battlefield, that the English suddenly thought, oh my God, it's the Knights Templar, and basically ran off in horror. So that's out there. And that they then hid their treasure. Well, there's all sorts of theories. I was up in a place called Kilwinning the other day. One theory is that the Holy Grail and their treasure ended up there. It couldn't, by the way, have been buried in Roslyn Chapel, featured in the Da Vinci Code, because Roslyn Chapel hadn't been built in 1307. It was built 100 years or more later. But the theory is that they hooked up with a family called the Sinclairs up there, and that the Sinclairs, I mean, I'm paraphrasing all this, and different people have got different ways of explaining it, right, that the Sinclairs were very sympathetic to the Templars, and that they were in possession maybe of old Viking maps to the New World, and that the together with the Templars, they all made their way then to the New World, you know, 100, 150 years before Christopher Columbus, that they got to Vinland. And then evidence of that is obviously certain structures in the New World, which people believe may have been Templar constructions.
What is your feeling on that? I mean, as a person who knows Templar construction and knows these things, is, you know, this is a whole cottage industry now of associating the Templars with, you know, symbols on a rock here, or you know, a mysterious looking building there, or what have you. I mean, as somebody who knows the European history of the Templars, does it make any sense to you?
So, I mean.
Or do you not want to answer that?
Yeah, I know. You also, of course, I don't want to I don't want to destroy my own blog. No. I mean, look, I think the first thing I really need to say, and I had this conversation with a woman called Professor Helen Nicholson, who's a hugely respected authority on the Templars. And we did a talk together at the Bradford Literature Festival last year. And, you know, it's funny, having dinner on the night before, I said to her, the thing about it is that the mystery and the history are so closely connected with the Templars. It's not a case of, let's stick to the factual history and leave the mystery over here. That even the people who gave us the information that we know about the Templars at the time can't be fully trusted. You know, a lot of the so-called facts around the Templars just don't sound particularly convincing. Even the idea of nine knights at the start, you know, it all sounds a bit Robin Hood and his Merry Men, doesn't
right.
it? Could people have reached the New World in the medieval period? Well, you know, the Vikings arguably got there.
Sure.
We know that, you know, they certainly got to Greenland. Is it just about conceivable the Templars could have got there? Being desperate men, you know, with a desperate mission, well, you know, let's hold out the possibility. If you're a serious, in inverted commas, historian, no, I mean, I think you'd just say absolutely not. First of all, you'd say the Sinclairs did not support the Templars. In fact, they testified against the Templars at their trial in 1307. You'd say that there's no evidence that the Templars even got to Scotland at this stage, let alone carrying the Holy Grail or anything else.
Right.
And you'd probably say that the so-called structures like the Westward Knight and the Newport Tower, that these are much later constructions, even as late as the 17th century. So, you know, you can blast holes in it, but, you know, the history and the mystery, as I say, are closely bound. So I don't want to say 100% no, could never have happened.
There's something that always never really squared in my head. If the Templars, let's go with the myth for a little bit. If the Templars went to the Temple of Solomon, found something akin to the Holy Grail or the Ark of the Covenant, and then had it in their possession for the next 150 years or however long it would have been, and then took it away and hid it in somewhere, who not just Oak Island or anywhere else. Because there's a lot of places that they supposedly have hit it. Why would there be? My question is: there just seems to be such a lack of information from the church, who they would have been working for, and all these sort of things during their time that they were so big and so popular throughout Europe. There just seems to be so much mystery around them. Is this all really Dan Brown's fault, or did they perpetuate that even when they were at their height? You know what I mean?
So, I mean, I think from the Templars themselves, we don't really have anything. I mean, it's...
Is that true?
Pretty much. It's even been said by... you know, by a couple of historians that most Templars were illiterate. I mean, they were incapable of writing their own history. Although it seems unlikely that they were all illiterate because they ran a banking system and
right,
were royal
right.
advisors. You expect them to have some level of literacy. But I guess people would say, well, they didn't write about it because they didn't want anybody to know about it. You know, it's something that they kept. You know, this is such an awesome secret that they weren't going to go around telling everybody that they had the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, the thing that always crosses my mind is that, you know, we know from the Bible that the Ark of the Covenant was, this, you know, practically a weapon of mass destruction. You know, this
right.
is something that the Israelites took out into the battlefield and had, you know, shot rays in all directions. Any of you who've watched Indiana Jones will know, you know, the temple, the Ark of the Covenant is, you know, is something that smites all enemies. And you would have thought that, you know, if they were being attacked, why didn't they bring the Ark of the Covenant out and fire it at
exactly.
all their enemies, you know, wipe them out? But, there is nothing on paper that says that they got the Holy Grail or the Ark of the Covenant. It's also been said that they got the Turin Shroud, the original Shroud,
right.
The head of John the Baptist, the head of Jesus as well is another theory
right.
that they found that. I was unaware that Jesus was beheaded, but that is one theory that's out there. but, you know, there's a lot of theory. But no, of course, you know, people would say, well, of course the Templars didn't write about it because the Templars would have kept that a dread secret.
Okay. Before I let you go, I have one last totally speculative question for you that I know that if I don't ask you, people are gonna question my interviewing skills here. In order to have built what, I don't know how familiar you are with Oak Island. I didn't call you because I felt you're familiar with Oak Island.
Yes.
Okay, so you know it's a 200-foot ditch and there's box drains and all this kind of stuff. And it's an if it were done the way we think it may have been done, it's an amazing engineering feat. Is this something the Templars were capable of? Is there amazing engineering feats in their history?
I mean, if you look at some of the castles that were built, not just by the Templars, but also the Hospitallers, I mean, well, unfortunately, we can't visit Krakatoa Chevalier now because it's in Syria, in a war zone. And unfortunately, has that even been shelled? But they're incredible constructions. I mean, I went to one of the Templar castles in what's now Jordan, or even the Templar castle in Acre, what's now Israel, which you can visit very easily. They are incredible constructions. And by the way, the Templars did seem to have something about tunnels. There are tunnels under these castles, massively thick walls, and they're incredible castles to see today. So, you know, could the Templars have constructed the sort of tunnels we're talking about on Oak Island? Absolutely. I mean, you know, in their lunch break, frankly. Go and look at the castles that the Templars built that are still there. Tomar, there's a multi-sided tower called the Charola, which is an incredible construction. It's still there. It's completely intact. So, no, absolutely. In terms of their engineering skills, Templars were really, you know, the cream. The cream's the cream in the Middle Ages.
Well, listen, I know you got to go, and I can't thank you enough for doing this and for answering all these silly questions at the end.
Well,
there.
Thank you. I hope your audience is gripped and wants to know more about the Templars. It's the subject that keeps giving.
Okay, and you can help them with that, correct? I mean, there are books, there are...
Well, absolutely. I mean, I guess the first thing I'd say is I run a blog, well, I've been running it now for 10 years, called thetemplarknights.com. And I divide everything into history and mystery on there, two categories. So if people want to be very serious, they can do the history. And if people want to fly off into the mystery, I've got lots of mystery on there. And then I've written a novel called Quest for the True Cross, which is very reasonably priced, and you can find it on Amazon. Just look, Quest for the True Cross by Tony McMahon, and I'll transport you back 800 years into the Middle Ages.
Sir, thank you very much.
Thank you, too.
So that'll conclude my talk with author, historian, and general Knights Templar expert, Tony McMahon. I got to admit, I'm definitely much more versed in American history, sort of colonial period and on. But this subject is forever fascinating to me. I can totally see how someone can be just captivated by the Templars and their history and their legacy and all the myths and everything surrounding it. It really is fascinating. Before we finish up this podcast, I want to expand a bit on a few things Tony and I discussed. First, it's very, very popular to include Freemasonry into this story of Oak Island and the Knights Templar. We're forever seeing the theory about the Templars digging on Oak Island somehow being related to Freemasonry. There is some evidence to support this, which I won't go into here, but as we hear from Tony, it's really speculation at best. I believe the official, or at least the most widely accepted official origin of Freemasonry points to the year 1717 as its start, which would put it so beyond the Templars that it would seem almost impossible to sort of blend the two. Many Masonic historians point to 1599 as the founding of the first Grand Lodges, which I think were in England and Scotland. I apologize if I don't have this all completely correct. I'm not a Mason. I'm certainly not an expert on Masonic history. Now, there is some evidence of Masonic rituals and writing pointing towards the late 14th century and before, but it's very hard for me to connect the dots between those things and the Freemasonry that we have now and the one of the last three or four centuries. We'll talk about this in a second, but the Templars were certainly great builders who liked to keep their secrets and enjoyed a good ritual now and again. So it's easy to see the similarities between Freemasonry and the Templars. but it certainly seems more like, more to me, like Freemasonry sort of took its inspiration from groups like the Templars rather than being the direct descendants of them or the carriers of their knowledge and secrets or that kind of thing. But this is really all speculation on my part. So let's kind of put Freemasonry to the side for the sake of this discussion and keep our focus on the Templars. Tony said something in the interview that really fascinated me and reaches throughout this entire discussion. That was the fact that we have almost no historical records to speak of that come from directly from the Templars themselves. Despite the assumption by some scholars that this was a problem of literacy or what have you, it says something to me that this huge multinational organization, who obviously had to keep financial records of some kind and planned huge elaborate construction projects, also kept no historical records. I'm not sure what exactly that says, but it says something. And I know this lends itself to every conspiracy theory ever about the Knights Templar. Now, I also want to talk quickly about La Rochelle, which he mentions there, the port Tony mentioned when I asked him about their sailing skills. Now, I'm fairly certain that if you listen to this podcast, you've probably heard the theory he mentioned about the Templars sailing off with the Holy Grail or the Ark of the Covenant or what have you. If I'm not mistaken, this theory originates in that famous book from the 1980s called The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail. And it's the one you know from the Da Vinci Code that talks about Jesus being married to Mary Magdalene and having children. And then there's the Priory of Sion, the Knights Templar, and you know all the rest, okay? La Rochelle is a port on the west coast of France, the Atlantic coast. It has an amazing history, and the Templars play a role in that history for sure. It is often referred to as a Templar port, and often referred to as the Templar port on the Atlantic coast. As Tony explained, the Templars hear about the arrest warrants, whisk their treasures off to La Rochelle, get on boats and hightail it to Nova Scotia or wherever you think the treasure might be. Seems logical enough to assume that the Templar fleet, if there was such a thing at this point, would leave out of La Rochelle. It also seems logical enough to assume that the King of France would also have assumed they would leave out of La Rochelle. And thus this theory begins to fall apart. But just because the details of this one theory don't hold up well, doesn't mean that all theories of the Templars coming to North America are then impossible, because there are plenty of other theories, and not just this one, that places the Templars in North America. Viewers of the Curse of Oak Island show are very familiar with author Zena Halpern, and her theory is just one, really, in a large list of them. Tony also mentioned the Order of Christ. This was essentially the Templars in Portugal being rebranded under the Portuguese king after their downfall. Now, what this does is sort of extend the influence of the Knights Templar out for centuries after their downfall. And it also extends this same influence. I mean, it's not specifically the Knights Templar, but it's the Order of Christ, which we can certainly call the Knights Templar. It extends their influence into the Age of Exploration. And Portugal and the Order of Christ played a big role in that. Again, this is theoretical evidence, but it's just sort of another piece in the puzzle if you're trying to put this all together of the Templars coming with their treasure to North America. But of course, the most compelling opinion Tony gave us was, quote, could the Templars have constructed the sort of tunnels we are talking about in Oak Island? Absolutely. On their lunch break, frankly. End quote. You can't be any clearer than that. So let's talk about tunnels, shall we? If you look up the words Templar and tunnel, you will no doubt come across the city of Acre. Some call it Acre. It's now called Akko It's north of Jerusalem on the Mediterranean coast of Israel. Okay, so let's just recap briefly here. The first Crusaders come to the Holy Land and capture Jerusalem, and then the Templars establish themselves there. A few decades later, Muslims under their great military leader Saladin recapture Jerusalem. The Crusaders sort of regroup, take the city of Acre, making it their center of operation, so to speak. And the Templars really kind of establish it as their headquarters in the Holy Land. The Templars build an incredible castle or stronghold there. And part of it is this amazing 500-foot-long tunnel that leads from castle to the sea. It's obviously used as like an escape route or a way to resupply if there's a land siege. At the end of the 13th century, Acre falls to Muslim forces who come in and destroy the castle and a lot of the city. The tunnels remain underground and essentially undiscovered until really the 1990s when a plumber was working on a sewage issue and he found these tunnels. They were then excavated, restored, and reopened to the public. It's an incredible example of this tunneling ability that the Templars had and that Tony speaks of. Now let's go back to Europe. He also mentioned Tomar, Portugal, a city in what I guess you would call sort of central Portugal. It's in between Porto and Lisbon, it's about 40 miles inland or so. You can basically call Tomar a Templar city. It was granted to the Templars during the war with the Moors to regain Portugal from Muslim rule and became kind of the seat of the Templar order. And I shouldn't even say kind of, it really was the seat of the Templar order. The Knights constructed the incredible Convent of Christ, Convento de Cristo, which served as one of the great strongholds the Templars defended throughout this continuing war with the Moors. After the Templars were arrested and essentially disbanded and became the Order of Christ, the Convent of Christ became the seat of this now new order. After the interview, Tony kind of mentioned to me that the tunnels underneath the convent are incredible and may have been constructed after the Templars, so I assume this could be a possible example of what the Order of Christ was capable of as well when it comes to tunneling. So like he said, it's nowhere near out of the realm of possibility for the Templars to have done this. In fact, the tunnels that would have been built on Oak Island kind of seem primitive compared to the ones that they built in Europe and the Holy Land. A few episodes back, we spoke to Dan Conlon. He's a leading expert on piracy in Atlantic Canada. I invite you to go back to listen to that show. And after that conversation, I said we can come close to putting Rick Lagina's famous X through the pirate theory, so to speak. But from what we've learned today about the Templars, and there's a lot more to learn, but even from just from what we know today, I can certainly say that we're not anywhere near putting an X through this theory. And that is without even taking into account some of the things that the current search team has discovered. So if nothing else, if you think the cross found at Smith's Cove is evidence that the Templars are the originators of the Oak Island mystery, we can certainly conclude now that the Templars' own history only really support that claim. And now, before we go, you know, I feel silly not at least mentioning that we have The Curse of Oak Island back on TV. Now, it might not be the show you're used to hearing, but it is getting there. And what History Channel has done leading up to this brand new season, which I think everybody really is ready to call a big season here, is they're putting together four shows, compilation shows. They're all going to do top 25 lists. And the one we saw earlier this week was the top 25 finds from Oak Island. And it included not only stuff the Laginas have found, but stuff from over the years, and then other things which are debatably finds to begin with. You know, good and bad. Obviously, they do some neat little things. There was some great stuff on like the 1704 stone and maybe the history of the 90-foot stone and lots of other stuff and kind of a recap of things that Laginas have found. Obviously, the Templar cross, so to speak, the lead cross was there. I thought they left out a lot of things that even they themselves have found that are worth really kind of examining and looking into. But, you know, again, we're not going to turn this into a criticism of the show, certainly not of four-episode sets of specials leading up. We'll save our criticism for the show proper. The only reason why I mention it is because here we're talking about the Knights Templar, and the next show coming up this Tuesday, which is United States, Eastern Time, 9 p.m., is going to be called, and I believe I have this right, the Top 25 Theories. Now, I think the other two after that are pretty much going to be kind of the history of the show, top 25 moments and moments you never saw and things like that. But I believe this one coming up is going to be the top 25 theories, Are there 25 theories out there? Absolutely, they are. There are. Are they going to actually show 25 theories? Well, that's intriguing, because those of us who follow Oak Island certainly can say with a lot of certainty that the History Channel show has done its best to sort of, what's the great way to say this? Steer their audience towards theories that they particularly find compelling, probably for narrative reasons. But there are a lot more than those that they really haven't discussed much on the show, that are controversial, that are skeptical. Be interesting to see. You know, depending on what that show is like, maybe I'll devote an episode to it, of this podcast to it, next week, sort of a bonus episode, kind of talk a little bit about that. We shall see. Let's let it play. But take a look at that. For those of us who are into things like, you know, reading blogs and listening to podcasts, frankly, on Oak Island, this is the kind of thing that's really kind of for us Oak Island geeks that love this stuff. So take a listen to that. Just wanted to mention that we're only a couple weeks away from the new season, and it's really getting close now and getting excited about it. So that's it for this episode of Digging Oak Island. As always, please subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcasts. And if you do enjoy the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen. That helps get the word out on us. Also, we invite you to follow us on Facebook. We're at Digging Oak Island. If you go over there and give us a like, then we can do a lot of, you know, you'll be able to follow the show that way. It'd be much appreciated if you did. And if you have any questions or comments that you want to send along to me directly, the best way to do that is via email, digginoakisland@gmail.com. Once again, I want to thank Tony McMahon for joining us. What a great conversation. This is why I wanted to do this podcast. Oak Island opens a door to so many fascinating discussions, the Knights Templar being among the most fascinating. Don't forget to visit Tony's website at thetemplarknight.com. Just start surfing through it, and you'll be hooked for hours reading his stuff. It's just fantastic. So until we speak again, I'm Dave McBride. Thank you for listening to Digging Oak Island.